This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hour number two. Thanks for joining us. Happy Friday to you. Get yourself for the weekend. All right, we got Will Gray joining us from NBC. We're going to talk to him about the PGA Championship. Round one. We had Ryan Ballingy on yesterday to sort of give us a preview of the tournament. Now we've had one round in the books as round two gets underway today. Second major of the year. Look, it's the PGA Championship is really interesting because, you know, when you're a golfer, you hear this a lot with these young golfers when they grow up. They're like, you know, when they're 5, 6 and they grow up and they're in these little junior tournaments. And then they go, what major would you like to win when you get older? And they all say the Masters, you know, because Augusta National. It's cool. If you're anywhere else outside the United States, you might say the British Open because it's the Open Championship. Right. After if you win that, they actually say at the end, so and so is the champion golfer of the world. Right, because it's got the most wide open field. If you're in America, if you've been born, you're born in the United States, you might say the U.S. Open. It's the national championship of golf. You know, a lot of amateurs can get in. It's open, meaning if you have a certain handicap, you can try to compete and try to go through regionals to get to the U.S. Open. So it's a more open field. That's where, you know, U.S. Open. But the PGA is the professional golfers championship. No one in the field is an amateur. Whether you're a club pro or whether you're a touring pro, everybody is a professional golfer. And that being said, it's not the highest on the list of ones. If you had to rank the four major championships, it's fourth. It doesn't mean it's not valuable. Everybody loves winning it. It's just that it's fourth among four really good ones. But that being said, it used to be in August, and it used to be the last one, the last grasp of getting a major for somebody in that calendar year. Well, August wasn't working out all that well. And, you know, football season was coming and there was a lot of pretty oppressive heat for a lot of places that they wanted to play this thing. So they decided that there was this nice gap in between the Masters and the U.S. Open that they could fill at a time where, yeah, basketball and NHL playoffs were going on. But that, you know, there's still more of an open part of the calendar. So they've moved it. And since they've moved it, PGA has gone up in stature a little bit. May not be the Masters or the U.S. Open or the British Open, but because it's the second major of the year, it's got a lot more attention than that August date. All right, Good, the Bad, and the Dumb is coming up next. It's Tony D, Ron Culver, as we continue on a Friday on Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. Glad you're with us.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb time here on your Friday. We do not send you into the weekend without it. Unless, of course, Ron's got the day off, then we absolutely will.
But I don't have the day off.
But he doesn't have the day off today. What's the good of the day, my friend?
The good of the day, American Eagle. You know the clothing store?
Yeah, the clothing store, sure.
They're about to get into the NIL business. With a quarterback that probably has the best name ever for a college football player.
All right.
And I'm talking about Oklahoma's, you ready for it?
Yeah.
General Booty.
Yeah, I saw General Booty, and I thought that was a nickname, but that's his name.
That's his name. Of course, he is part of the only one I know out of that whole clan. What was his name? John David Booty?
Yeah, John David Booty, yeah.
I mean, he's the son of, I guess, a former LSU wide receiver, Abram Booty.
Yeah. So, man, but the name's your kid General. That's a cool name.
That is. General's a cool name, but I mean, I don't know. I mean,
it's like, it sounds like a name for a pet, and yet you named your kid that. So that's got to be something cool.
Yeah. I mean, you know, quarterbacks are known as the field generals, right?
Right. Exactly. You must have known. What a prognostication foresight. On that young. Yeah. Foresight in naming your child General. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Kudos to his parents.
And it fits for a clothing brand when you're talking, you know, last name Booty.
Yeah, right?
Got to put him in some pants.
Exactly.
So good on General Booty, who's a JUCO transfer, who got offers from other places but decided to take his talents to Oklahoma. He actually went to the same high school as Kyler Murray.
Oh, he did? Wow.
Allen High School in up in Dallas.
Does so. Nick Saban have anything to say about this?
He probably will.
Well, there's Oklahoma. They got a quarterback. Yeah. He's got an NIL deal with a clothing line, all illegal and such.
Because, you know, all Brett Venables doing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. What Brett Venables is doing, I mean, my God. I mean, take a look at that program. My God.
How am I supposed
American
to compete?
American Eagle involved in that? I mean, yeah. What are we doing here?
You know, Abercrombie won't return my calls.
Exactly. Old Navy can't even make a visit to campus, but we're doing things the right way. American Eagle at Oklahoma, what are we talking about here?
Yep.
Yeah. Good for him. Good for General Booty.
General Booty.
That's awesome.
I can't wait to – I hope he starts.
Man, the kind of newfound wealth these kids are getting as college students.
It's ridiculous.
Wild, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just insane. You remember when they used to scream how poor they were?
Yes.
I can't even take my girlfriend out for a burger. Now you can fly her to Rio.
If you wanted to.
If you wanted to for dinner. Like, give me a break.
But she better be worth it. Come on, Rio, no, that's
kidding,
a trip.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah, you don't want to end up leaving her there because you got into a fight.
Yeah, you're already, you know, it's already.
But it is amazing how quickly this happened, too.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, are we even in a year? What did it, like, maybe it was, what, 2020?
Pretty fast, yeah. It was fast.
It feels like it was overnight. We went from, hey, these kids are selling their gear for tattoos.
Yeah.
To,
biggest crime in college football.
Yeah, to, you know, and now we got two coaches fighting over each other because one was able to get better NIL deals.
Right, exactly. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. Fun times. Fun times with college athletics.
And it's not over yet by a long shot. I can't wait.
You know what? We were talking about this yesterday. I think we talked about it off the air. I'm really, really interested because I think economically we're heading into a recession, which is kind of sad. And there might be a lot of companies that are going to lay off some people. And that's also very sad. But if those companies are latched on to major NIL deals, how the public will react to that? Like, if you've got a company that's laid off, let's say, 20% of its workforce, yeah, but they're still paying some quarterback at State U $500,000, I know it doesn't necessarily add up that you save jobs with it, but people might – there might be a backlash to that.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, but what if American Eagle folded?
Right.
You know, just because we're talking about American Eagle folded, they're still on the hook of paying General Booty. Sure. Whatever they promise to pay him.
Yeah, exactly.
If that does come, and I hope it does happen for him. That would be awesome.
And you know what else? The underlying thing about NIL is how many people are making money off the kids making money, meaning how many lawyers are involved making sure paperwork is correct. Like, there's like a cottage industry now of people behind the scenes that are helping these student-athletes out, making sure that they're not getting screwed over, so you hire this guy, and he gets a certain percentage. And they're not necessarily agents, but they're people that have your back when making sure that the deals are all on the up and up. You know what I mean? Like, there's a little small cottage industry of people making a lot of money off students making money off NIL. So, all right,
Quick, I mean, I may have missed it, but these kids can get agents now too, right?
Yeah, there's a little bit like an agency that can kind of come in and help them, yeah.
You know, just help them wiggle through all
because
the stuff.
Because, again, if you're 18 years old, what do you know about, like, an NIL contract, right?
Or your family know.
Like, what
unless
what
your
are you
family
signing,
has a lawyer right? in the house.
Like, you ever read legal documents? It give you a headache, right? You're like, oh,
no,
I
skip
I
over them,
here?
Tony. I'm like you.
I'm like you. I hit yes.
Scroll
like,
down to the bottom.
Scroll
I
down
accept.
To the bottom and hit yes. And they're written that way so that you can be like, I don't get this. And they're like, well, how about hire somebody who does get this? And you're like, okay. And then, if you're a major corporation, you're going to put a lot of clauses in the NIL deal, right? Like, you don't get your money if you're arrested for this, or you're like, there's going to be a lot of reasons we won't pay you for this NIL deal. And if you just look at it as what's the dollar figure on this without looking at the fine print, you don't even know what you're signing. So there's a group now making money off making sure that they read that stuff for you. So, you know, it's all the other stuff. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day, and I really like this story. It's the power of social media. We've talked about it before, and this one hits home a little bit to me.
Okay.
There is a parody Twitter account out there that tweeted out that after nearly 40 years, Costco was going to raise its price on their $1.50 hot dog combo.
Oh, no, really?
Yes.
You said parody account.
Parody account, because there is an account called Breaking 911 that gives you up to date information. I'm not going to say it's a reputable news source, but they're pretty accurate. Okay. Well, somebody just changed their handle to saying Breaking 911 and was using the same photo. And so they did, they said that after 40 years, Costco was going to raise the hot dog prices from $1.50 to $2.50.
Oh, okay.
That prompted some, like a certain Darren Rovell, to respond to it as well. Like, oh my God, inflation is hurting us all. But the real issue to this was Costco's stock dropped 13%.
What?
Because of this parody account.
That
seemed all too real for maybe an hour of time.
Whatever money you pay your social media people, you got to double it, because those people are the ones that are supposed to monitor that stuff and get on top of it.
And see, why this is one of my favorite stories, because the CEO, the founder of Costco and the CEO for a very, very long time, he has since retired, literally said he would kill anyone who ever raised the price from $1.50.
Yeah, yeah. You would raise the price of the membership to keep the hot dogs at $1.50.
Yep. You'd raise the price of every good in Costco that you could buy.
That's right.
Before raising the hot dog price even 10 cents.
He
literally said, if you raise that price one penny, I will kill you.
Yeah. Good.
And I believe him.
I believe him too. It's like Augusta National. Augusta National has the lowest food prices of any sporting event in the country. Even if the price of pimento cheese is risen, they make it up in other areas.
Yeah.
Like the gift shop merchandise is just a little bit more per master's shirt, right? The membership might be a little more. The TV rights may be a little more. Like it's all connected so that they make a little bit money on this end so that the media attention on how low the prices are can stay that way. Right?
I mean, there's nothing more satisfying. I'll be completely honest, because we'll do Costco maybe once a month, once every other month, a couple times a year type of thing. There's nothing more satisfying than dropping, $200 at a Costco, but knowing at the end of that is, the end of that path is $1.50 hot dog and soda.
That's right. That's part of the joy. Membership has its privileges.
Yeah. I mean, it's the dumbest thing in the world, but
yeah, exactly.
$1.50 out. I'm like, I'm the type of person like, yeah, well, I'll just go there for lunch. $1.50 and a drink. I'm good.
Yeah. Telly Savalas and Players Club had nothing on a Costco membership with a hot dog and soda. All right. What's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day, Tony, is that there's another feud a brewing in sports.
All right.
And this one happens to be between the Carolina Hurricanes versus Bud Light.
What are they doing now?
So the Hurricanes have a ticket policy, and they have a very strict ticket policy. What they're trying to do is maintain home ice advantage. So you can only buy tickets for a Hurricanes game if you are in the vicinity of North Carolina, South Carolina, and Southern Virginia.
Okay, so they don't want New Yorkers invading Raleigh for this series?
They don't want Rangers fans invading. So Bud Light offered up a deal to any Rangers fan that gets into the arena and buys a Bud Light beer, that they will cover that beer for them.
Whoa! So what happened?
Well, Carolina responded via Twitter they said that, don't worry, we already have water in our drinking fountains.
Ah! All right.
So it's a petty feud. Via, it almost feels like it's a Wendy's type, roast me type thing.
Why? I understand the it's a bad look when you have traveling fans that show up and invade. I get it. I absolutely get it.
But that's really where the dumb kind of goes into, is that if your team is in the playoffs and you're supposed to be a good team, do you really need to set these type of restrictions?
I know. I don't know.
Like, when Miami outlaw Boston fans from showing up.
How do you stop it? Like you do the best you can, but people find ways to get tickets.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They do. They just find a way. And then,
I mean, are they going to card everyone going in?
Yeah. Like,
Like, show me your ID. Show me that you're like from Carolina. Oh, no, you can't come in.
If I lived in Raleigh and I went in there with a Rangers jersey on, would they interrogate me? Like, what would they do?
They bring you into the next room?
Exactly. Like, can we see you for a second? Like I'm in a casino in the old Las Vegas where they're just, you know,
Are you going through TSA?
Exactly. Let me, you know, where there's a big guy going, okay, you can have the ticket and the hammer, but you can't have both.
Right.
Look what they did to my hand, man. Like, I don't, like, what are we doing here? Like, if a guy gets a ticket, no matter what, like, I've heard people like, we're gonna ban season ticket holders who sell their tickets to, what? Like, because they say, and rightfully so, legally, they've proven this. If I buy a ticket, if you have an event and I buy a ticket, I don't own the ticket, right? Like, you still own the ticket. There's like a weird legal loophole that says I don't own the ticket, that you can still say, okay, but you know, you can't do this with that ticket. I don't know how they got around that, but it feels like more and more teams are now, it used to be like they didn't care, right? Teams would go, I can't help it. We can't, like, we're hoping more Red Sox fans show up to Fenway Park than Mets fans in game one of the 86 World Series, right? We're just assuming that'll be the case, given that we're in Boston. But now, like, teams...
And that's the issue, too, is that, you know, if it's your team, you should be playing to
absolutely,
them.
Absolutely, sure.
I mean, I doubt Red Sox fan ever has to worry. Like, when the Yankees come to visit... Red Sox fan doesn't sit there and go, oh, you know, let's limit the amount of Yankee fans coming in. Because, you know, we don't want them. We want to make sure our Red Sox fans have home field advantage, our Red Sox players.
Right.
And of course they will. You know, Packer fans never worry about Bears coming in or Vikings coming in to take over the stadium.
Well, yeah, you wouldn't think so. Yeah, but I don't know. I'm not familiar with the Carolina Hurricanes and their fan base. I'm sure it's Raleigh, North Carolina. It's not the biggest city in the world, but it's not a town.
No.
I'm sure they've got enough people that can fill an arena for a playoff hockey game.
I mean, you can...
For a team that won the cup in the last generation. What was it, 2008 or 7 or something?
I mean, maybe the ticket prices are too high for the area.
Maybe so.
And they're all like, no, we'd rather watch it on TV. I don't know.
And New Yorkers are coming in like, yeah, we'll buy them all.
Yeah, we don't care.
Let's go Rangers! Where are we? North Carolina? What is this? It's hot down here. Let's go Rangers! Oh, yeah, it'll be great. So, yeah.
I just hate when teams have to do this. I mean, remember the Rams did it too?
Oh, I know.
To the Niners?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It failed miserably?
It's so hard. It's hard to do. You do your best, but still, like, people find ways to get in. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. We got Will Gray coming up at 40 past the hour. We'll talk PGA Championship with him, round one, led by Rory McIlroy, as they head out to Southern Hills today for round two, as we continue its wake-up call.
Wake-up call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Hey, when you discover a new favorite bottle of Cabernet or Chardonnay, a Total Wine, and more, you'll discover a whole lot more, like the friendly smile of an expert guide ready to help you find the perfect bottle and the confidence of knowing you just found something special. So explore the wondrous selection and totally low prices at TotalWine.com. Well, you'll find what you love and love what you find. Drink responsibly. B21. Hey, I wanted to ask you about this story. I meant to ask you about this yesterday. But I wanted your thoughts on this story of the women's soccer players getting equal pay now here in the United States. With the are they going to make a ton of money off the World Cup? Like, do they get a piece of the World Cup revenue that the men are going to generate this fall?
I don't think so.
So
I just think that when
because I'm wondering if that's when
I think what it is like when their World Cup comes around, they're going to get the. The same. I don't know how it's going
to
work.
Well, I got to think that they would pool all the money together to afford paying the women equal as the men. Because the women.
No, very true. Because the men's tournament is going to generate so much more money.
The men's World Cup doesn't generate the same amount as the women's World Cup. The women on their own, like when they go out on these tours and stuff, they make a lot of money. But the men make a lot of money too. Right?
Yeah.
The men games are packed when they do these games, you know, in various locations of the country. But I was, you know what I was thinking about? Is I don't do politics on the show, so I don't want to get into the political stuff, but I everything that I've heard one side of the political aisle go, that's never going to happen. Seems to happen.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Eventually it does, yeah.
Like remember, like the Washington Redskins, right? Like, I mean, it was like, they're never going to change the name.
Or you go back, like, remember in the 80s, Nancy Reagan's campaign, you know, just say no.
Right.
It's like, you know, we'll never have legalized drugs in America. And now it's like, you know, we're sitting there going, well, why doesn't the United States just legalize it all?
Exactly. So
not all the hardcore ones,
and I remember the arguments on this one, too, when the women were, like, suing and taking it to court. They're like, you don't make enough money to warrant this. And they're like, yeah, but we're far better, and we've had more success on our stage, and you know, all of this, everyone's like, but still, the Men's World Cup generates this for the men, and you don't deserve a piece of that, and I was listening to that, going, yeah, that kind of makes sense. Unfortunately, like, I wouldn't expect a WNBA player to make as much as PJ Tucker of the Miami Heat,
and you wouldn't expect a WNBA player to get a cut.
Of the NBA.
Of the Heat and Celtics series.
Right. And so then this news came down, and I'm like, they did it. They made it happen.
Yeah, but I don't know if
they're getting equal money now.
I really don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. I don't know if they're just going to say, you know, from here on out, we'll take this World Cup, and then when the Women's World Cup comes in, we'll put all the money in a big pot and then pay you out. Because I don't know how you do that.
And secretly, I don't know how would the men feel about that if they were like, we would have made this, but now we're making, you know, maybe some of them are like, no, I don't care. Equal pay. I'm all for it. But I wonder if some of them are like, well, I don't know about this.
I don't know if it's that. See, I always thought
we earned a lot of money making this World Cup.
You and I had talked about this, and it, to me, this made all the sense. It's like, you know, you get the same percentage or even give the women a little bit more of an uptick in percentage from the overall pot.
Yeah. But because equal money?
I don't know how that's going to work.
Like, Rose Lavelle gets equal as Christian Pulisic?
Right.
Like, that doesn't, I mean, I don't, I, again, I'm not privy to the inner workings.
And, you know,
of the finances,
and I'll say this about them. Lord. They are equally as important to their team.
Of course, without question. But,
you know, she's one of the top players in the world, let alone just the country. But, I mean, Christian Pulisic's one of the top players in our country.
What's the money pool for the men's, like 6 billion or something crazy like that? Like,
yeah.
It's super high, where all the countries get a bit of the pie.
You'll see it. The World Cup is not going to be short of sponsors. And we're only going to see, when we're watching the World Cup, we're only seeing the American side or you know, some European names that we recognize. Pay attention to, like, the electronic scoreboard that's on the background.
Sure.
You'll see companies you've never heard of.
Right, yeah.
And then there's a whole bunch more on top of that. Because there are companies in, say, Qatar, there are companies in Asia that are going to be sponsoring this that have no affiliation with the United States.
Yep.
And so we won't show them, you know, like when you watch a soccer game near the scoreboard, they always have, or where the score is on the screen, they always have like a company logo up there. And, you know, they do those in like 15-minute intervals, which is fantastic. I mean, what a great way. You're advertising constantly on screen. But they're ran in like 15-minute intervals. You know, we only see like the companies we know. That only matter to us. We don't see the companies that matter to Australia.
So it's just, I don't know. It seems.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious too.
I might have to look into it a little bit more because I'm kind of, I don't know. Like, look, I'm not sexist or anything, but if I'm on the men's team and I've worked my tail off to get to the World Cup and I know a certain money is coming to me and I'm going to get less. So because like, I don't know if that would fit well with me. Now, maybe some of these guys are like, I believe in the larger cause, right? Okay, that's cool. But I wonder how many of them are like, no, I was supposed to get twice this.
You think maybe some of the men go, hey, you know what? We'll trade you some money for one of those stars underneath your logo.
Yeah, right?
On your shirt. We want one of those stars.
I don't know. It'd be interesting. By the way, thanks for, real quick, thanks for telling me about regulation, because I saw the highlights this morning of Everton and their game last night.
Yes.
Yesterday, where they won 3-2 to avoid regulation. And I now know what that is. So I now, when I saw the euphoria that was going on in the stadium when the guy got the go-ahead goal, it was the third goal of the game, and everybody was just throwing up smoke bombs and dancing in the aisles.
Oh, my God. It's a party.
Right?
A party like, there.
It was so wild. And I'm like, this is just more than a game. They're not going to the D-League.
No, last place does not get you the top pick in the draft.
Exactly. Exactly. So that was fun to watch. We'll talk to Will Gray coming up next on the PGA Championship.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsmap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's head out to the Progressive Guest Line. The PGA Championship round one in the books yesterday. They'll go into round two today. Southern Hills, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Rory McIlroy is the leader. Will Gray joining us from NBC Sports to talk about round one and where this tournament is heading. How are you, my friend?
I am good, Tony. Always good to be with you for these big events we all
talk
about.
Absolutely. Yesterday, Rory McIlroy was teamed up with Jordan Spieth and Tiger Woods, and both Spieth and Woods finished at over par. But Rory McIlroy has a game now. Where do you put it? Because I saw this incredible stat, like seven of his drives were over 320.
Yeah, I mean, he went after that course. A lot of guys are trying to lay up and hit stingers, and he said, nope, I'm going to take the driver. And when he's driving it on a string, he's going to be very hard to beat. I mean, we've said this for years that, you know, a big question in golf is, you know, when everyone's playing their best, who is best? And Rory often is the answer to that question. He did not leave too many shots out there yesterday. He got as much out of it as he could. And especially for Rory, that's a big deal because in recent years, he's put up close finishes in the majors, but he hasn't won one in 8 years. And a big problem for him has been slow starts on Thursday. He more often than not puts himself in a big hole. Then he tries to dig out the next 3 days. Now he's in pole position. He's got the lead, and that's a position where when you look at his four previous major wins, he usually has won these from in front.
Yeah, that's funny. That's because that was where I was leading next. It feels like I there's been so many majors where Rory is around the leaderboard, and everyone's like, well, if he had a good round on Thursday, he might actually have won this thing. Is there a reason for that, or has he talked about why that has occurred to him in a number of events?
I mean, there's not a great reason to pinpoint. I think a lot of it just has to do with pressure and expectation that it affects even the greatest ones. I mean, you look at some of these events, I think Rory is susceptible to wanting it too much. When you look at the Masters trying to round out the career Grand Slam, when you look at the Open Championship at Royal Portrush, which was such a big event for him playing back in Northern Ireland, he puts his first tee shot of the day out of bounds and makes a triple, and he's out of the tournament in 10 minutes, essentially. So this is one, you know, finally I think it all clicked for him, and credit to him that he was able to get a hot start going and keep it going on a course where, as you mentioned, a lot of big names are over par. This was by no means an easy golf course yesterday.
Tiger Woods, four over, said his leg hurt. Was there a look that he had that showed he was kind of hurting in that round, or was that something he just said afterwards?
No, those last couple holes were taking a toll. It looked like he winced on something around his 15th or 16th hole, and all of a sudden he couldn't get through the ball. He couldn't put any weight on his foot. Afterwards, he was doing an interview where there was a Sky golf cart where he was holding onto the cart that showed his scorecard in order to not put weight on his right leg. So, you know, it's just unfortunate that this is where we're at with Tiger. I think it's great to see that he's playing in these big events, but I think it also shows how thin the margin for error is for him, that it really does take just, you know, one wrong step, one wince. He had a couple of shots where he's standing awkwardly in the bunker and had a tough time getting out, that, you know, the good shots are there. He's able to hit the drives, he's able to make the putts, hit the greens, but when that leg goes wrong, it's very difficult for him to play 18 holes in a row, let alone 72.
I'm not expecting you to be a doctor here, so I don't know if we know the answer to this, but I would like to see him at the U.S. Open in Brookline and the British Open. Could he damage this thing this week? If it's hurting this badly, should he pull out of this to protect himself and get healed up for these other majors down the road? I don't know the extent of the injury, but if he's hurting that bad, should he still be doing this?
I think there's going to be thought to that, especially if he's four over now. If he's making the turn today at 7, 8, 9 over and he's definitely not making the cut, you know, maybe there's something to be said for that. I do think from listening to him and his comments, it's more about pain tolerance.
Got it.
I don't know if there's much that damage that can be done, but I do think that, you know, of those two that you mentioned, I think the Open Championship is the one that he and everyone else has circled. When you look at St. Andrews, a place that he's won twice before, the flattest piece of land in golf, we're not going to deal with the hills that he's had to deal with at Augusta National and Southern Hills. And it's a style of course that he can succeed on. You don't need to hit it 330 at St. Andrews. So I think that of all the tournaments this year, that was the one where he was going to have the best chance to play well, contend, and potentially win. So in my mind, if he's a little banged up this week, if he needs to skip the U.S. Open to focus on the Open Championship, I think that's something he would consider.
It's interesting. I was talking about this earlier because golf is so unique from other sports in that golfers, they don't really go away. Like, champions golfers don't go away. There's not a press conference that says, that's it, I'm done, I'm not playing anymore, you'll never see me in this uniform again. He's going to be at Augusta till he's gone. He can go to the British Open until he's 60. So he's always going to be around. But it's the decline of Tiger Woods that I think we're starting to realize, oh, this is when it's probably – when he won the Masters in 2019, I thought he could win a couple more. He doesn't seem to be that player anymore because of that accident.
Yeah, and I think that's the issue. And we saw it yesterday in the opening round that you're right. You know, what gets you out of bed and what makes you think that, yeah, I can tee it up, I can play in this event, is the 12 holes that go well, where you're hitting it, 310 on a tight draw, and you're hitting, 12 of 15 greens and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden the bottom falls out for the other four, five, six holes, which we saw yesterday, and the bad is too bad to overcome. And that's where his score kind of got away from him, was on those bad holes. I mean, he came out the first hole, hit the fairway, hit a wedge to 3 feet and tapped it in for birdie. And you're like, okay, game on. This is great. But, it's a mixed bag for him that's going to make it difficult to be consistent on these major championship setups where you have the best in the world, and it's just going to be very difficult.
Round one at Southern Hills, what was the course characteristic? How did it hold up? What's the key to playing as well as Rory played?
If you can hit it 340 with a 3-yard draw, you're going to be in pretty good shape this week. I don't know how many players can do that with the consistency that he did. We all knew going into this week it's going to be about controlling your approaches. Iron play is going to be very key, and then it's going to be scrambling. Everyone's going to miss these greens. There's not a lot of rough around the greens, so you can have a ball where your approach misses by 10 or 15 feet and it rolls 30 yards off the green, and you need to be able to scramble from there. So it's a difficult course. It's a fun course to watch. I will say that it definitely got appreciably more difficult in the afternoon. The late wave played about a stroke harder than the morning wave. So the course that Rory is going to face this afternoon is definitely going to have a little bit more teeth than the one that he saw yesterday morning.
I want to ask you about this 660-yard par 5. Scottie Scheffler reached it in 2 with an approach shot of over 300 yards. Tell me that was wind helped, because if you're just going to do that, there's no par 5 in the world that's actually a 3-shot hole anymore.
Yeah, it was a little bit of help with the wind and downhill, but still, I mean, these are some goofy numbers that everyone's
crazy.
Seen. And yeah, they're putting up some crazy stats, and that's just, the world that we're in right now. We're talking about, do we need to, roll back the ball, and what are we going to do with 8,000-yard courses and all that stuff? But, if you can't stretch it out to 640 or whatever that was and still make a difference, then, the architects of tomorrow are in for a world of hurt.
We've seen a lot of guys in majors have great opening rounds and then they sort of disappear. We've seen guys that have played good in 4 rounds and haven't crossed the line. We've seen Will Zalatoris contend in a major at the Masters a couple of years ago. He's one of the best ball strikers in the world. Good opening round, 4 under. Do you feel, or do the people around golf feel, like this is a superstar in the making? He just is going to break through soon?
I think this is a star in the making. I don't know that we're ready to go superstar. Now, that being said, he was spoken in the same breath a few months ago as Scottie Scheffler in terms of a very talented player that had yet to get a win, and we saw what one win did for Scottie Scheffler. It absolutely opened the floodgates. So potentially that could happen with Will Zalatoris. But yesterday he putted very well, which is a big anomaly for Team Zalatoris. If he's able to putt half decent, he's going to be there in the mix this weekend. But I think the general consensus is similar to what Scheffler went through. You need to get a win somewhere else. I don't know that a lot of people expect his first win to be on this big of a stage. You have to go back to 2003 to see someone get a win at a major that didn't have any win before on the European Tour or the PGA Tour. So it's not that it can't happen, but it's a little difficult. So I will say he definitely raises his game at the majors. We saw, as you said, the runner-up at the Masters last year, and he tends to play better on these harder setups. But I think that it's still, everyone is waiting to see when he's going to get that win. Everyone expects him to get multiple wins. But it's what when that first one comes, and then what do you do immediately after that?
Jordan Spieth's got some work to do at 2 over. He is capable of going low. Is today the belief with some of the weather that's coming in, is today a go low kind of day? Is that projected?
It's going to be tough. I don't know that there's not a lot of 63s out there, but he's going to have to go and try and find a pretty low one to, you know, not only get into the weekend, but to position himself in decent shape. I mean, if Rory goes out and puts another couple under par and he's sitting there at 8 under, it's going to be hard to make the cut at 1 or 2 over and feel like you really got a chance here. So I'm sure his goal is to get into red figures for the week, which is to take a 3 under 67 today. He certainly has it, but there's a lot of players that are big names that are over par right now. John Rahm, Scheffler, and Morikawa, the top three players in the world, all played together yesterday afternoon, and they're all over par. So you can get this course. You can get to, you know, 3, 4, 5 under and get back into the mix, and then we'll see. I think that they're expecting a little bit of setup changes for Saturday and maybe make scoring conditions a little bit more easy, and then it's going to be hold on to your hats come Sunday for the final round.
All right. Anybody else that impressed you in round one, maybe 1, 2 under that had a good enough round that was a little surprising to you, or something you expected and you were like, you know what, that's worthy of popping up?
Yeah, I think that Justin Thomas putting that 367 together was really important. He's another guy. You know, it's amazing. You talk about Rory going 8 years without a major. Justin Thomas is 5 years since his major, and he's talked openly about the pressure he's putting himself under to try and get that second major. And it's really a change in how your career is viewed, you know, not only going from one to then two plus majors. So I think that he's definitely in the mix. I thought Cam Smith bounced back very well from a slow start, the Players Champion from earlier this year at TPC Sawgrass. And I think a guy that's not going away is Tom Hoge. Shot that 66. He's sitting there with Zalatoris, one back of Rory. He is in the top 10 this season on the tour in iron play. He got his first win at Pebble Beach a few months ago. So I think he is going to be a player that we're going to see on this leaderboard for the next couple of days.
I'll ask you this question. It's something we talked about leading up to this week. But now there is golf to talk about. But before that, Phil Mickelson, is he missed this week? What were people saying about it? I know more of the focus is now going to be on the golf, but this week, how much has he been missed at this tournament as a defending champ?
Yeah, I definitely think he's missed. I think Rory had some good comments in his pre-tournament press conference where he said it's unfortunate and it's sad. I mean, he said, listen, what Phil did last year at Kiowa, winning the PGA at age 50, becoming the oldest major champion in history, that is an accomplishment worth celebrating this week. And it's unfortunate that he's not there for that celebration, and it's unfortunate that it's instead casting a cloud over the tournament that is being played. So, you know, listen, Phil's absence is largely by his own hand, but at the same time, you know, you come back around to this event, you start thinking back to what he did last year, and I do think that it's a little sad that he's not there to enjoy a victory lap over what seems like it will be the crowning and capstone achievement of his career.
Will Gray, NBC Sports, joining us on a Progressive Guest Line. Will, I do want to let you know that our condolences to you and your family for the loss of your mother, our radio family. You've been on our show for many, many years, and we wanted to express that to you. So thank you so much for coming on today.
I appreciate it, Tony. It was tough, but I appreciate the sentiments.
Absolutely. We love you, Will. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
All right,
that's Will Gray, again, NBC Sports, on a Progressive Guest Line as the PGA Championship. Like what he said about Rory. Like, he's right. It's been, 2014? That's a long time for majors. And listen, there's nothing against winning majors in a bunch. Nothing against that. Like some of the best golfers won majors in a bunch. But the real superstars have won them over a period of time. And Rory burst onto the scene as a young man, and he captured the 2011 U.S. Open, and won a PGA. He won a British Open. He won another PGA. So he got his majors in a big group from like 2011 to 2014. And there's certainly nothing wrong with that. Nothing to take away. But you'd like to see a young man like this who's still got a lot of good golf and a lot of good years to pop a couple more in his early 30s, mid-30s, late-30s, et cetera, to be a real, real extra-level Hall of Famer, not just a Hall of Famer. All right, we'll come back, wrap up this hour as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Again, thanks to Will Gray, NBC Sports. We got two guests coming up next hour, don't we? We got Chris Sheridan. Join us to talk. But before that, we got Connor O'Gara. He's going to join us from Saturday Down South on the Jimbo Fisher, Nick Saban feud.
I was going to ask, did the SEC make any news yesterday?
Yeah, right?
It's just a random occurrence that we're having Connor O'Gara on, huh?
Love Connor O'Gara, man. He must have loved it.
I want to know what other SEC schools are thinking today.
Yeah, exactly.
I know you talked about all morning, you know, Lane Kiffin. Does he go, I got some stories.
Yeah, I got some stories.
What about new SEC Texas, University of Texas?
I was a little disappointed this morning because I went to go check Pete Futek's site because he's really good at commenting on the biggest news. He didn't have an article yet. Doesn't mean he's not having one. I just thought he would ran to his computer to type one out on his thoughts on this. It was a fun exchange, if you will, between these two.
I mean, but so, it was what I loved most about it was that, you know, we talked about Saban's comments, at length yesterday. I mean, that took up most of the show. We were having fun with it. Like, you know, this is the new era of NIL. And then Jimbo Fisher comes in right after our show and goes, I've got to hold a press conference. Film it.
We are not messing around.
I mean, you can almost hear him going, we're going to do it live.
Right. Yeah. Get this media in here now. Yeah, especially. And if you're covering Texas A&M, you're like, shoot, I got to get down there. What's going on with Jimbo? Oh, man, what a day yesterday.
That's fantastic.
You got Dion commenting on Twitter about this, and who knows what he's going to say about. He might talk about today.
No, come on. This is prime time. You know he's got something.
Yeah. They ain't doing no Affleck commercials together now. Coach Prime, I know you like money.
Just kind of sad. I kind of like those.
I did too. I thought those were great commercials. I loved them. You got a little Deion Sanders and Nick Saban for Affleck. That's great. I loved it. And now, who knows? I ain't going to get those anymore. Unless Nick's apologizing. Yeah, hour three coming up next on your Friday. Again, we'll talk about what's going on between those two head coaches with Connor O'Gara and what's going on in the NBA Conference Finals with Chris Sheridan. It's all coming up as hour three is next. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Glad you could be with us.